Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. Books.
Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. Today, I'm talking to Mark Z. Danielewski about The Little Blue Kite. It's his most recent book, but it was published several months ago. We decided that we would do it on Bookworm at this time because we're doing the show out of our house. I'm talking to Mark on the phone. You're probably listening at home instead of in your car, and your children are home. The Little Blue Kite, among other things, is a children's book, and I thought that our conversation might help you to have a conversation with your children when you read this book to them. First, Mark, welcome.
It's a pleasure to be here and not be here at the same time.
Mark has been talking with us since House of Leaves, his first big novel, his breakthrough book, which I'm told by his publisher still sells steadily. It's one of those very rare things, a literary bestseller. It's still beloved not only by its audience and by classrooms, but its readers read it again and again and again, finding tidbits. Now, this new book is for children, and Mark and I had a very wonderful conversation in which it was revealed that perhaps the children who read The Little Blue Kite will be preparing themselves to someday read House of Leaves. So it's a preparatory book, yes?
I think in some ways it prepares young readers for more advanced books. I think it functions in a lot of ways. It certainly speaks to those people who are familiar with House of Leaves or Only Revolutions or The Familiar. But those books aren't necessary for embracing, I think, the transformation that's at the heart of this book. And it's probably its most personal aspect to the book. It relates an experience that I had and was very meaningful to me.
Well, between the last book of The Familiar, was that The Redwood?
Right. Volume 5 of The Familiar was called Redwood, correct?
Yes. And this book, The Little Blue Kite, Mark Danielewski, I've been saying Danielewski for years, but is it more appropriate to say Danielewski?
Oh, no. You pronounce it perfectly. I love that soft F at the end. And Michael, as odd as that is, as sort of a little, whatever, Philip, this is discussing pronunciation of names, I do think you immediately get to the heart of The Little Blue Kite, because a lot of it is about getting away from words, which may seem very strange coming from a writer. It really isn't just about how to read House of Leaves or any other big text. It's really about moving above and beyond the words. You know, we have to understand the puissance of words, but at the same time, it's very important to be able to fly above them, which is literally what The Little Blue Kite does.
Yes, and I think all along that there's been a problem. People have liked to pretend that when they read your work, they're reading something like Pynchon or James Joyce. But I think that these books are not about their difficulty. They're about the clarity of the universe. We're meant to see that the world is a clear place to live. The little boy who's the star of this book is the rare little boy in a children's book. He is known to be kind, decent, generous. He's good to his family. He loves them, and his family loves him, and he is in the process of learning one of life's basic lessons. You must somehow learn to get over fear.
That's right. That's absolutely right. And also, the first step of that is to actually recognize what fear is. It's not necessarily that visceral terror that we feel when confronted with death, but it can be also those nuisances, those little moments of boredom that we're experiencing even now in these kind of strange, perilous times. That uneasiness. What exactly are we feeling uneasy about? What exactly is destabilizing our lives? What exactly is impeding our direct relation to the world, which is still magnanimously vibrant all around us, even right now, even as you and I are divided by this digital murk that keeps us in separate spaces. We can't even see one another's faces. And yet the world is still alive with all its magnificence. And there is a way to access that. And I think the little blue kite is very much not only for children, but also for parents. It's also for those who wish to speak to their younger selves, who wish to embrace that sort of the beginner mind, that open mind, that simple mind, of finding a way back to a direct connection. And it's something that I think is paramount for times like these, where we feel so distanced by masks, by technology. There's everything is in the way. And it doesn't have to be. We can escape this murk and become more present to this world around us.
Well, I think between Redwood and this book, you got married and you had a child. And, you know, these are things that many people, particularly writers, have great fears about. Will they be able to continue to do their work? Will they be able to raise a child, given that writers are frequently so alone in their nature and require solitude for their writing? Now, of all the many writers who've been on Bookworm, Mark, you are one of the most optimistic writers that I know. Your world, your cosmos, is not a chaos. It's an aspiration toward the heights. What has allowed you to have such positive feelings?
I think it gets to how you framed the little blue kite about how we overcome fear. As soon as we overcome these fears, these primal fears, then suddenly so much of experience is available. It's all there. And it's amazing how a mind certainly constructed can destroy that vision. My process with text has always been about working in a way that the reader, by reading that experience, will also be able to work through and move beyond the book itself, whether it's, you know, actually moving through the house in House of Leaves to find, you know, your own state of emotional liberation, or in this book to be daring enough to really fly your true self higher and higher until you have the confidence, the humility to let go of that self and realize you are that self.
I'm talking to Mark Z. Danielewski. It's a pleasure to be speaking to him today. He's in his house. I'm in my house. We're on the phone. You're listening to KCRW's Bookworm. The book is The Little Blue Kite. It's published by Pantheon. I mean, if there were a word to be used to accompany a conversation about Pynchon, that word would almost inevitably be entropy. I don't think that Mark Danielewski believes in the entropic universe. He believes in a place that's resolving itself constantly and dramatically. This is, like the boy in the book, a generous, big-hearted book. And I recommend it both to the adults and children you're talking about, because in learning how to fly a kite, you're learning how to handle the wind, to handle the wider world, to let things escape from you even as you hold on to them, to let things go when it becomes necessary to let them go.
This sort of personal experience that I had where I was, it was actually right before I got married, where I was in my mind flying a kite higher and higher, I realized was important really in one small way, because it the basis of this book comes from a long tradition. I mean, you can take any number of kind of people who teach meditation, for example, say Kodo Suwaki, who described the true self as a brilliantly transparent, like a deep blue sky, you know, or even Suzuki, the practice of Zazen is not gaining a mystical something. Zazen is for developing or allowing a clear mind as clear as a bright autumn sky. This tradition of the mind as sky and ultimately letting go of the mind in order to fully embrace the sky is long. One of the things, though, that I did find through sort of meditative practices is that it's frequently rooted purely in words. And in many ways, The Little Blue Kite is a guided meditation, but in a visual way. Mm-hmm. It's not so much attached syllabically as it is to simply imagine for yourself what it would be like to start with a kite and fly it higher and higher. And higher and higher. And as you let that string out, and as it flies above the storm clouds and the chaos and all that is convoluted and distracting and anxious, you know, can you get above it? And when you do, can you let go of that kite to discover that you're not on the ground flying the kite, but you are the kite. You're far above.
And suddenly the kite is no longer little or blue, or even a kite. It's imagining that the kite is the universe, is the vastness of the sky, and so is the little boy hero. If the sky is central to the book, it's Kai, whose name is the name of the protagonist. Kai becomes sky. Kai becomes kite. Kite becomes sky. And this is not a linguistic transformation. It's the transformation that occurs in the contemplation of the self, in the power, the process of becoming part of the universe. In other words, this is very much the product of a Zen meditation, yes?
Yes. Not only does one discover that one is the kite, but then as you traced out, you begin to let go of even those facets, the tail, the string, the color, the kite itself, and then where are you? And I think one of the, again, sort of small arguments in this tradition is that by creating a mind that is spacious, that is open to the world, it creates room for others so that we don't have these kind of rigid, you know, abhorrences to others, to other ways of thinking. But in fact, we see that there is plenty of room, plenty of space for others. And we begin to approach a more philosophically moral question, which is, how do we, in reading texts, move beyond those texts to a greater awareness of the world?
To my mind, as I read it, it wasn't about reading text. It was about raising children. and getting beyond the individual nuances of their problems to recognizing that their problems are the problems of living in the world, the problems that we all face and that we face with the help of one another. And that the discovery in this book is that courage, as the Cowardly Lion has to learn too in his book, courage is making room for others. Courage is helping Dorothy. Courage is helping Tin Man and Straw Man. We have to be generous to those we travel with. We are all on the same trip. There's no escaping that trip. And on that trip, time ceases to matter. Words cease to matter. What matters is the universality of the experience. Now, parents, if you're listening, if you want to read your children a book in which this vastness actually comes into play, this, The Little Blue Kite, is the book.
You know, part of the reason I wrote this was for that younger self, myself, who was a kid that was constantly perplexed and enclouded by dark moods. You know, that's a lot of the children's books that I encounter, you know, just kind of appeal to children who seem to be relatively happy or whatnot. And this book is very much about a little kid who's aware of his own moods, his own losses very early on. And that certainly is where it's personal to me. And so I think in these times where moods are so turbulent in all sorts of homes, you know, across the land, across the world, you know, that there's a way of framing that as a challenge that we can kind of move beyond, both for children and for parents. There's a lot about this book, even though it doesn't use the word specifically, that comes down to stewardship. How are we also parenting, involving ourselves, looking after, traveling with those others that are not human, whether they are, you know, the animals that we share the sky with, or even the insects or the plants, you know, that if anything, we've seen more and more in these recent days, just how important it is for a greater space for all creatures on this wondrous planet.
Well, I was astounded yesterday to be reading on Facebook someone saying that there are more trees in the Amazon and there need to be than there are stars in the Milky Way. And I thought, oh, please let this be true, and let us, knowing this, protect them, knowing that we need every single one of them. And that is the nature of our stewardship to the extent that it exists on our planet.
And to find that space in all of us where we can cultivate, you know, an attitude that allows for these wondrous friends.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to KCRW's Bookworm. I'm talking with Mark Z. Danielewski about his newest book, The Little Blue Kite. We'll continue after this short break.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm. And I'm talking with a writer who has been on Bookworm so frequently that in truth, I consider him a friend. That's Mark Z. Danielewski, and we're talking about his book, The Little Blue Kite. In the book, adventure is shown to have an initiation. Every kite has a kite that came before it. Even the teacher in this book has a teacher who appears in your dedication, everything follows an ongoing sense of emergent order. And that's one of the pleasures of reading the book, that it's cyclical, that it operates in its own natural cycle of taking Kai, its hero, into the stars.
One of the things that I am quite fond of with this book is that it is not a dramatic inciting event as is necessary often in television or films, but that moment where you decide to take from within your own closet, whatever that closet is, buried in its own kind of, you know, capes of darkness, that little blue kite that has been neglected, that is you, that moment can happen right now. That moment can happen as people are listening to this conversation. They can say, this is the moment that I'm going to do that. I am going to reach in there. I'm going to put that neglected part of myself together, and I'm going to begin to hoist it up into the world. It kind of warms my heart as a reminder for myself, even when I'm feeling, you know, terribly bleak, that moment is always available when you can crack open that door to yourself and set it free.
You know, Mark, when I talk to you, I am operating at a different level of myself than the one at which I usually operate. And I'm talking to someone who, as a writer, wants to explore not the dark side, but the dark side as it gives way to the light. You're one of the most powerfully optimistic American writers that I know of. And do you sometimes find people wanting you to go into the darkness? You are, bless you, a deep optimist. Everyone wants to think that a writer has a choice about what he writes. And your choice has been at a time when most of the writers people talk about in American writing right now, they are writing severely depressive novels, end of the world novels. Some of them, I know, are books that you like very much, like the books of Cormac McCarthy. But you have chosen a different track, and it's very interesting to me. I think that, you know, this book is dedicated to a Zen master. It has at its heart the idea of teachers and the idea of being taught and then letting go of your teachers, freeing yourself from the string that holds you to the kite. It's sort of amazing to me that you attempt to do this. It's not very easy. Most of the time, if we have novelists like this, maybe it's J.M. Barrie with Peter Pan, a level of unsophistication that is unexpected. But you're not unsophisticated. You're tied to all the traditions that the other, more dour writers tie themselves to as well.
My commitment, my dedication is with the world that abounds us. And I you know, I remember one of the most trying, difficult books that I wrote was the one that followed House of Leaves, Only Revolutions. And it was a very dangerous choice. But I recognized with the success of House of Leaves, especially, how I could easily have become encaged by that experience, by that genre, by that type, so that in many ways I would just be sort of reiterating that creation over and over. And one of the things that troubled me was that a lot of House of Leaves, a lot of its construction works so that the reader is constantly brought back into the book. And so in many ways, Only Revolutions was the break from that. It was writing a book that was centrifugal as opposed to centripetal. You had to move outside of the book to understand it. You had to move through the world to understand it. You had to experience your own aches, your own longings. You know, to be frank, there are lots of people that still feel it's unreadable. They feel that it's that it's too difficult, that it's mechanics, it's mathematics, it's imbrications, it's, you know, evocations of romantic quest for liberty and whatnot are beyond them. But for those who are writers, for those who are creative spirits, that book, at least for me personally, represents how I could set myself on a journey as opposed to lock myself in a cage of repetition.
I know that people at Pantheon want House of Leaves too. Of course they do. And instead, you've given them a children's book whose gesture is to the vastness of the universe, traveling outside the murk, up above the universe, where the hero, as the back cover reminds us, learns that good depends on granting others place, and that requires courage. I don't know. You say that most children's books are happy. Yes, some of them are, but not very many of them are given to teaching universal lessons anymore. You've written your own Aesop's fable here, and it's a very beautiful one.
Thank you very much, Michael. It's a very personal book for me, and it's something that happened to me, but it also reflects the experience of others who've been teachers along the way. And if in some way it brightens someone's sky out there, then it's served its mission.
I've been talking with Mark Z. Danielewski, author of The Little Blue Kite, published by Pantheon. Thank you, Mark, so much for joining us. If you've been hearing sounds in the background, we're taping not at a studio, but in our homes. And it's a pleasure to unite with you, Mark. Most of the time, I get advice from you about my cat or my veterinarian. It's a pleasure to talk to you about your work from home to home. Thank you.
Always a pleasure, Michael. Thank you.
You can visit kcrw.com/bookworm for a podcast of today's show. It's also available at Apple, Spotify, and other podcast services. I'm told it airs twice a week in Berlin. You can even listen on demand with KCRW's smartphone apps. Special thanks to my co-producer, Sean Sullivan, associate producer, Alan Howard, and technical director, Mario Diaz. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms. And we're just read this. I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mail of Sparks.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm when Fulzia Karimi is our guest.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.